Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back in. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. I am Clay Travis. He is Buck Sexton. Encourage all of you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a minute of action there. You'll be glad that you did. Tons of great guests all throughout the week as we roll through the final day of the week. By the way, we got a lot of guests coming your way, including our friend Alex Berenson in the final hour of today's program to give you the latest on the COVID data. But we are joined now by Ryan Gerduski. He's the founder of the 1776 Project PAC and author of They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. And Ryan, we all owe you a debt of gratitude because you are starting to actually put the pedal to the floor here when it comes to holding many of these different school boards accountable for what they are teaching our kids. Thanks for joining us. Explain what you're working on and the success you've already had.
So back in May, I started a super PAC, the first federal super PAC for school board elections. And I know big dollar donors, no billionaire helped me with it. It's just something I kind of created on my own. I did some media for it, and we received about 15,000 people donated, small dollar donations. And with that, I was able to help campaign on behalf of 50 state candidates in 29 school districts. And so far, as of right now, we have a 75% win rate.
That's incredible.
Ryan, I just spoke last night. Good to talk to you, my friend. I just spoke last night to a big group out in Wisconsin. And to say that the folks were fired up about what they feel is a grassroots parents uprising against the apparatus of these school system, the Democrat leftist domination and indoctrination. I mean, it's an understatement to say they're fired up about it. How do we see this now spread? I mean, the big thing for us on the right is how does Virginia become the template for winning in other places? Because the CRT training, critical race theory training in Virginia, it's not unique. In fact, there's more of it in other places too. So what have you seen? How do we make this a movement and not a one-off?
So I think that what people don't understand is that critical race theory is being practiced, not necessarily taught, but practiced in the way that they do the teaching in all 50 states. Hannah Jones, author of the 1619 Project, often boasts that it's being her exact program, the 1619 Project, is being taught in all 50 states in hundreds of classrooms. And that's a program that says that the American Revolution happened because the British wanted to abolish slavery and the American colonialists didn't. It's a total fabrication that never, ever happened. Historians have debunked it, and nonetheless, it's being taught in schools. I think that there's a lot of things to be done that could be done. You've seen a lot of governors across the country sign bills or executive orders banning CRT. The problem with that is that they do not have any repercussions if the teachers continue to do those programs. So there's a law that necessarily says you can't teach CRT, but if you do, there's no punishment. I think what has to happen is the school board level. It's where this fight is. It's why I decided to create this PAC. I think the curriculum must be altered. And for decades, we've had Republicans sit there and fight all over colleges and universities being too far left, or over school choice is another big Republican talking point, but they kind of let curriculum slide, and they let curriculum be controlled by the Democrats. And I think that's how magnifying curriculum, I think, is the way to do it. And if you go to the PAC website, 1776 Project PAC, PAC.com, you can send me, if your school district is promoting and practicing critical race theory, you can send me examples of it. I think the problem is a lot of people can't identify exactly what critical race theory is, but they kind of know it when they see it. And they just need more examples of it. And we need to know which school districts are problematic, because it's not every school district that's problematic, but many of them are.
When you see this issue motivate, I think, to such a degree, many people who came out to vote in 2021, do you foresee it as also being a major issue in the 2022 elections? Is this energy in your mind only going to grow surrounding what kids are being taught in school and parental involvement in those lesson plans?
Yeah, because here's the thing is why Democrats are losing on this issue is because they're putting down parents who are concerned. Rather than sitting there and addressing it or fighting over the merits of why they think it should be taught, they're saying, no, you idiot, this is not even being taught. You're being lied to. and their kids are coming home or their grandchildren are coming home and saying, you know, my teacher's making me feel bad about being born white. That's not something that that charges parents up when they are openly criticized, and then when the Justice Department calls them domestic terrorists. Democrats' response to this has been so abysmal on every single issue, and it's not that Republicans have done such a great job on championing this issue or thinking of an alternative to fighting against it, but what Democrats have done is, I mean, they've just sat there and they've mocked parents. They told them that their opinions are wrong. And it's not just what people understand is the critical race theory. It's not just history. It's not just the teaching of history and indoctrinating kids in the 1619 Project or making them do privilege walks, which is where white children have to show how privileged they are by walking in front of the rest of the room. Or in the case in Atlanta, Georgia, where kids were being literally separated in classrooms by their race. You have programs in like Los Angeles County where school districts receive less funding if they have a majority of their population being white. In New York City, in my hometown, you've seen the mayor on his close in his last few months in office guts gifted and talented programs because there's not enough racial diversity in them. You're going to see them go after, and you have already seen them go after the hard sciences, math and science, because they're not diverse enough. It's not quote unquote equitable enough. And I think that this charges people up, normal, rational people who are not drinking the Kool-Aid on woke progressivism, sit there and recoil from this, including many Democrats. And I think that's why you've seen not Democrats, but left-leaning independents. And that's why so many of them sat there either to go and vote or to vote Republican, some for the first time ever.
We're speaking to Ryan Gruduski. He is the founder of the 1776 Project PAC. Ryan, is there, you think, an opening here as well? I spoke last night to someone you may know as well, Vivek Ramaswamy, who wrote Woke Inc. And we were talking about how this parents' uprising against critical race theory in schools, and as you rightly point out, a lot of snide sneering from the Democrat apparatus did not work out well for them in this last election. But there's also the wokeness and really a form of CRT that's being taught in or really enforced in corporate America, too. Do you think that there's a place to have people actually start to make gains looking at, you know, I don't know if you saw this Microsoft, we'll have to play it for everybody. You know, they start off a Microsoft meeting now saying, we know we're on indigenous land, and we basically are apologizing for that. I mean, this is at Microsoft. You know, I think that the same way that people have seen the schools have lost their minds when it comes to kids, corporate America, in large part, I mean, Clay talks about it in the sports world a lot. It's broader. It's all over the place now in corporate America, too. Is there a pushback we can get going there that will have political effect?
Yeah, this is where Republicans are just missing the ball completely because too many of them are still adopting libertarian talking points on business and letting business do whatever it wants to do. What President Trump did so successfully in his last year in office was he sat there and he denied federal contracts to companies that practice critical race theory. And you saw immediately speakers who promote critical race theory being dropped, their contracts being dropped from corporate America because they wanted federal contracts. All it would take is a Republican governor, especially in big states, in states like now Virginia or Florida or Texas, sitting there and telling telling businesses, we will not have any government contracts with you if you promote CRT, if you bring CRT speakers to your thing, if you use, you know, race-based hiring practices or race-based, you know, whatever, we are not going to give you a state contract. Those state contracts are worth millions, if not billions of dollars that always go up. It's the easiest money you could possibly get if you can get a state contract. Every corporation desires them, and to deny them would hit them where it really hurts. So I think that is where politically they should move. If they can just, if Republicans can just open their eyes to big business is not your friend, which the Republican voters have woken up to, but Republican politicians are still lagging behind on that issue.
Ryan, good stuff. We appreciate you. It's Ryan Gruduski. We encourage you to check out the founder of the 1776 Project PAC and author of They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. Thank you, Ryan. And if we've learned anything since 2020, there's nothing quite as important as a powerful immune system. Over 20 years ago, Dr. Dennis Black created and invented Texas Superfood. It is the original superfood. 55 vine-ripened fruits and vegetables, plus probiotics and digestive enzymes. You can build your body's defense from the inside out. Dr. Black wants you to know your immune system's job is to detect, deflect, and destroy bacteria you come in contact with, which is why Texas Superfood boosts your immune system better than anything on the market. Your grandma told you to eat your fruits and veggies, but with busy schedules and fast food, guess what? Most people don't. That's why you need Texas Superfood. Buck, how can they get it?
Look, if you can't, won't, or don't eat all your fruits and veggies, you need some Texas Superfood. It was made for you. Start boosting your immune system for under $2 a day. Go to TexasSuperfood.com/buck or call 855-TEXAS-55. That's TexasSuperfood.com/buck or call 855-TEXAS-55. Welcome to the second hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, everybody. Thank you for being here. It is Open Line Friday, of course, so that means the lines are open. Funny how that works. 800-282-2882. 800-282-2882 is the phone number. We said we would talk to you about woke Microsoft, which we will in a moment. You got to hear it. Trust me, it's worth it. You're going to say, what? And you're used to probably hearing some pretty crazy stuff from corporate America. But this is all part of the discussion we're having here about where does the left go now? I mean, yeah, the Democrat Party, but the left more broadly. What do they do in response to this? And if you want to get a sense of what the woke left believes in this moment after their loss in Virginia, Democrats' loss in Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, a creature of the DNC, a part of the DNC machine, losing to a political newcomer, how'd this happen? What should they do about it? Well, AOC, for example, is out there saying the real problem is they weren't progressive enough.
On the election front, I actually think we have good news as well. I know that Virginia was a huge bummer. And honestly, if anything, I think that the results show the limits of trying to run a fully 100% super moderated campaign that does not excite, speak to, or energize a progressive base. And frankly, we weren't even really invited to contribute on that race.
Okay, so the left wasn't fired up enough. This is what she's saying. It was too moderated is where, I think she meant moderate. Too much of a moderate campaign, she says. That was the problem. Meanwhile, people that have been in Democrat politics a long time are saying the party has lost its mind. I want them to listen to AOC. I want them, Clay, to take the AOC approach. And what does that mean? I mean, how crazy can things really get? Microsoft is one of the biggest software companies in the world, obviously made Bill Gates an ultra wealthy billionaire many, many, many times over. Here's the kind of stuff that you hear at a Microsoft event in Seattle to start off their big online forum. Play six.
Welcome to Microsoft Ignite. First, we want to acknowledge that the land where the Microsoft campus is situated was traditionally occupied by the Sammamish, the Duwamish, the Snoqualmie, the Suquamish, the Muckleshoot, the Snohomish, the Tulalip, and other Coast Salish peoples since time immemorial. A people that are still here, continuing to honor and bring to light their ancient heritage.
Clay, can we just, we paused it there. Since time immemorial, first of all, because, Buck, there were no humans living in North America until what, like 50,000 years ago? I mean, if you actually study the expected, I mean, I know they're constantly evolving when people actually arrived in North America, but time immemorial is 100% not true. But it's so weird and awkward that feels like a satirical opening to a super woke like comedy special.
Well, where do you go? I mean, who among the Muckleshoot or the
The Snoqualmie is like a name, an area, so I at least know how to pronounce that.
Okay,
one.
There we go. I mean, I know Chinook from that region. There's like the Chinook tribe because of Chinook helicopters, which I've ridden in back in the day. I know those. I never heard of the Muckleshoot before. That's neither here nor there. Who do we go to beg for? Do we beg forgiveness? What do we do? What are we supposed to make of all this? But Clay, it actually, now, there, I want to play that part first because that's just clear woke insanity.
And by the way, this is funny too, Buck, because you know, there, even in Microsoft, there are a lot of people who think like us and we're like, hey, I don't know that we should begin our presentation by acknowledging that indigenous people used to live on these lands. But if somebody raised their hand and said that, they would be afraid of being targeted and potentially losing their jobs because of cultural insensitivity. There's a huge percentage, I guarantee you, of Microsoft employees secretly listening to shows like ours that know in that boardroom, in that meeting, does anybody have any qualms or disagreements with us beginning a meeting like beginning that big event like this? Tons of people would have said yes, but they were terrified to raise their hands and say yes.
I think that's absolutely true. I also think that if I started this show, I mean, I can't speak to the native tribes of Tennessee. You might know better than indigenous tribes of Tennessee. If I started this show, though, saying, I just want to apologize, everyone listening to the Clay and Buck show, for sitting here in this radio studio on, you know, Iroquois and Huron and, you know, Mohican land. I feel very badly about it. And do I do that every day? How long? What is enough? When can I be cleansed of my sins?
When is your white guilt expunged?
Yeah. When have you done enough? That's what I want to know. How does this go away ever? But Clay, then on this part of it, there's a little bit of a dispute from the audio. People are saying that there's a reason for this, for some of it at least. It keeps going though in the wokeness.
My name is Allison Wines. I'm a senior program manager in our developer tools division. I'm an Asian and white female with dark brown hair wearing a red sleeveless top.
And I'm Seth Juarez, program manager in the AI platform group. I'm a tall Hispanic male wearing a blue shirt, khaki pants. Today we kick off 2 days of learning.
Now, okay. Now I've been told that this is because they want people who are visually impaired, can't see, to feel more included in that. Okay, I mean, maybe. But there's also others that were said. So that seemed, I'd never heard that before. But they also were announcing their pronouns, of course. For some reason, it wasn't that audio. But they said, man, my pronouns are he, him, and she, her, and all this stuff. And I just want to know, you know, how much of this, does this have to be the preamble that we all go through all the time? If not, why not? What purpose does this serve, if not to drown oneself in white guilt and then try to expunge it through virtue signaling for one's own benefit, actually?
Buck, this is one of the all-time arguments to me that these companies are basically monopolies. Because if you have all of this time, you know, inside of Google, inside of Apple, to be sitting around having debates about things like this, which don't impact your business at all, then you are so powerfully economically as a company that you can overwhelm everyone else and still have time to have these debates and discussions and absurd virtue signaling woke directives, and it doesn't impact your bottom line at all, right? I mean, that's one of the intense competition would, in theory, a company obsessed with all this external signaling, which doesn't go to the essence of what the company does, would lose in a truly competitive marketplace to another company that would say, hey, we're just going to kick ass. And it's really kind of absurdly ridiculous that we've ended up in this place. And I think what you're starting to see when the New York Times is saying Democrats are basically too left wing, when you started off earlier talking about all the different people, Al Sharpton, did you see this? Al Sharpton came out and said, hey, I think we've gone too left wing in the Democratic Party. When Al Sharpton is like, hey, I think we've lost our sense of reality, you're way out there in space cadet land.
Clay, they're talking about trying to cancel or at least, you know, repudiate some of the work of the most successful black comedian of our generation.
Yes.
Who is a liberal who does not like conservative ideas overwhelmingly across the board. Doesn't really like conservatives, quite honestly.
Yes.
Who says that whiteness is what he's actually attacking with all of his work. Not good enough because he upset the trans community. So yeah, they're starting to see that intersectionality, which is their belief system of everything is interlocking levels of oppression.
Yes.
And everyone's on a scale. There's a hierarchy.
There's
where
a victimization pyramid.
That's right. And so you're constantly going to be in conflict, not only with the so-called top of the pyramid, you know, white supremacy in the thinking and the construct that they have, but also with each other. You're going to see that other groups, who's truly victimized, who gets to actually determine what is acceptable discourse about different things. I mean, this is another just moment of this Microsoft thing where they do the pronouns and also announce their ethnicities.
Hello, everyone. I'm Natalie Gadilla. I'm a Caucasian woman with long blonde hair, and I go by she, her. I'm a product marketing lead here at Microsoft and co-host of the podcast Security Unlocked with this guy.
Yes, that would be me. Hello, everyone. I'm Nick Fillingham. I'm a Caucasian man with glasses and a beard. I go by he, him, and I'm a security evangelist here at Microsoft.
No, hold on. So the explanation that I saw online for this, I'm not even sure about, is the visually impaired thing. I wanted to play that because they do the whole he, him, she, her, as if,
yes,
believe it or not, Clay, we knew from hearing, we knew from their voices. I know this is a crazy idea. You can actually tell the difference between male and female voice 99 times out of 100. I know this is a shock to libs. But even with the visually impaired thing, why would they feel discluded? I'm not sure that really, it seems strange to me. I've never heard that before.
Well, this also just further ties in with your identity has become a modern form of royalty. Remember back in the day, and I think sometimes maybe people still introduce themselves, but somebody would come out and say, as the, you know, third Earl Rockingham, fourth Viscount of the Third Kingdom, I believe, and what gave legitimacy to your belief system was the title that you preceded the I believe with. Pay attention on television how often you hear someone say, as a gay, Hispanic, trans man, I believe. Well, why should I care? I mean, in terms of your opinion, I care about what you believe, but why should I care about the preface of your identity? Your identity should not give legitimacy to the arguments that you make. We have gone back in time in the same way that aristocracy used to use their bloodline as a legitimate basis for their opinions, which is what we revolted against in the United States. People now use their identities, which they were given at birth. It's not like you have ended up choosing to be, you know, black or white or Asian or Hispanic. You're born that way.
I feel that part of the pushback and the backlash against critical race theory, for example, is that people realize from reality, from what they're experiencing in their day-to-day lives, that if there is, in fact, if we're going to talk about systematic oppression, if we're going to talk about the difference that actually will come into play when you're applying for a job, when you're applying to school, the truth is, this is by the numbers, this is proven, this is going up to the Supreme Court, you are at a disadvantage applying for a job with the same credentials, and this is where SAT scores and other things come into account, to college, a disadvantage as a white male, a disadvantage as an Asian American male, compared to other groups. And yet we're constantly told that the only systematic oppression that exists is in favor of the, yes, very people for whom I can actually point to discrimination in hiring and discrimination in college admissions against white and Asian males.
Yes.
On the other side,
it's indisputably true that that occurs.
Yes, that is a fact. That is, yes, a fact. That is a reality.
Yes.
On the other side of it, they'll say, well, but there's disparate outcomes in different processes. There's not enough representation. To that, I say, well, do we want quotas? Because if they're quotas, that means we're not basing it on merit.
Illegal.
We're basing it on quotas. You can't,
yeah,
have
quotas
it both
are illegal.
Ways.
And by the way, the argument here, which came out of the Lyndon Johnson Great Society, was that we needed to have forms of affirmative action in order to justify redress for slavery and unequal treatment in the history of America. Then the question becomes, if you buy into that premise, which is effectively state-sanctioned racism, if you buy into that premise, the question becomes how long? Because right now, we are now 60 years, roughly, into an affirmative action environment. And what has happened, as you rightly point out, Buck, and is why it's starting to blow up, is systems that were designed to initially just punish white people are now bringing in large numbers of Asian people who are saying, wait a minute, we're a minority group who is being discriminated against under yes. affirmative action policies designed to create more inclusion.
And there's also a sense of resentment against the Asian American minority in this country from the left for doing so well, because that undermines your earlier point, the whole, oh, the system is so racist mantra. Really,
that's impossible for people to succeed, except Asian people are kicking everybody's ass.
The end of the work week is here, and the question I'd pose to you is this. How many days this week did you have really agonizing pain? I mean, it's an easy question. Up until now, finding the solution has been difficult, but we have one, and it's called Relief Factor. Created by doctors and perfected over 15 years of scientific research, Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free product that was made for you. Try it, please. Nearly 70% of those who try it over an initial three-week period go on to order more. Our friends at Relief Factor have developed a three-week quick start pack. You take Relief Factor three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 3 weeks. You'll know if it works for you or not. Clay, my dad loves it, helps with his knees, his back. He's out on the golf course swinging away.
My wife works out big time, hard all the time, helps with her recovery as well. It's why you should join Buck's dad and my wife and the more than 500,000 people that have ordered the 3 week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to get the $19.95 3 week quick start developed for you. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor. Feel the difference.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are going to be joined at 2 o'clock by our friend Alex Berenson, the latest with COVID. Rochelle Walensky of the CDC said something. I mean, Clay will tell you, you would have had to bleep me if I were on air in real time. And Clay sent that clip to me about masks and how amazing they are just in time for the winter season. Of course, we'll explain what's going on there. But first, we are joined by Peter Navarro. He's a former assistant to President Donald Trump. He is the author of In Trump Time, A Journal of America's Plague Year Out Now. Navarro served as director of trade and manufacturing policy and the National Defense Production Act policy coordinator inside the Trump White House. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Clay and Buck, couldn't be more delighted. The In Trump Time thing, by the way, is an expression I coined early in the administration. I'd be sitting around with these bureaucrats and they'd be hemming and hawing. I go, no. We're getting this done in Trump time, which is mean as soon as possible. And that was kind of the business sense and ethic that Donald John Trump brought to Washington. And we did get a few things done.
We want to get back to that in a second. I did, though, Peter, if I could, want to get your sense as somebody who was director of trade and manufacturing policy in the previous White House, to weigh in on what the heck is going on right now. We've got all these supply chain issues. People are seeing empty shelves. They're seeing prices go way up. How is this happening, and what is the Biden administration responsible for? What are they not?
Well, what you're not seeing is anything on Capitol Hill in those frivolous spending bills that would fix it. What I focused on with the boss was Buy American, Hire American, bringing our factories back home, and the supply chains would follow. That gives you resilient supply chains. What we have now is just the opposite, fragile and broken supply chains. And it's basically attributable in many ways to the pandemic shock, that you could see this stuff coming. And what I'm worried about is not just the inflation that's coming, but also the stag part of that equation, because you know, if you've got a computer chip that you got to get from China over to Detroit and it's held up and you start holding up production, worker productivity goes down, right? That drives up effective wage inflation in a bad way because workers aren't making anything more. And in the meantime, the economy slows down because you can't get the cars off the assembly lines. What we need to do, and what the Biden regime is incapable of understanding, is secure our supply chains here, focus on it. You know, the idea that the Department of Transportation secretary would be sitting at home leaning in a recliner for like 2 months while the worst supply chain crisis emerged ever is just abominable. So a lot of this is leadership. When I was in the White House and the pandemic hit, I went from like 24/7 to like 48. I mean, it was just crazy. Like you stay on the ship, you get your job done. So they need to focus on the problem rather than to blame everybody else for it.
I think that's such a good point. If Peter Navarre with us right now, if you would, or any other person working for Donald Trump had walked in and said, hey, my wife just had a baby, I'm going to be out for the next 2 months staying home on paternity leave, what do you think his answer would have been?
The boss would have said, yeah, have a good time, and we'll see you later. And there would have been somebody else in that job in Trump time, which is to say, quickly. Now, look, I never was a Buttigieg fan. I always thought he was kind of goofy and ethereal, but to have such poor judgment. The first 3 years of the administration, I was the lead on trade manufacturing and things like China tariffs and things like that, steel and aluminum tariffs. When the pandemic hit, I had to change into like what effectively was the quartermaster in the war against the pandemic. It wasn't my skill set, but that was the mission. That's what the In Trump Time book is about, how we grapple with that. But it was all hands on deck. And this, I'm telling you guys, this supply chain crisis and this labor market we're facing, now I'm a macro economist. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. I got a few clicks on me. And unless we commit to bringing our supply chains home, the other thing, the universal vaccination policy, I mean, look, I think it's insane. I'm not anti-vaxxers. I was one of the guys who helped create the vaccine. But even if you support that universal vax policy, you have to acknowledge the labor market and economic consequences. You know, when a significant fraction of your longshoremen, food processors, truckers, not to mention police, fire, and Navy SEALs are getting fired or laid off because they don't want to abide by that at a time when you're already facing 10 million job openings that we don't have, and a slowing economy and soaring inflation, you don't pursue that kind of universal vax policy. And one of the key villains in the In Trump Time book is the god of lockdowns and mandates. That's Tony Fauci. And I don't know about you guys, but I faced him head on, and I'm so sick of having to listen to that little twit. When in fact he's responsible for the pandemic, I prove that in the In Trump Time book. So everything's going wrong. We're going from the best president in modern history to the absolute worst. These people are clueless and they don't understand anything about how to solve these problems. It's in many ways it's frightening.
Peter, I was at an event last night. There were over 1,200 people there. You know what they started chanting? Fire Fauci. So, yeah, trust me, a lot of people recognize it. I loved every second of it. We're speaking to Peter Navarre, former assistant to President. Hold on a second, Peter. I got to give the plug for your book. One sec. Former assistant to President Donald Trump and author of In Trump Time, A Journal of America's Plague Year. Now, Peter, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
No, exactly. They actually started from Fire Fauci.
Yeah, we're yelling Fire Fauci when I was giving the speech. Yeah, people realize that he is an evil totalitarian smurf, or at least that's what I call him, and that he has done tremendous damage to the economy, and that he is not honest with people, that he never says even the craziest restriction goes too far. And there's enormous psychological and economic impact that I think people are still just figuring out what it is.
Well, the In Trump Time book should deliver the final moral blow to this guy and put him in jail, because in the book I describe how as early as January 2020, Fauci knew that virus came from that Wuhan bioweapons lab and that he was likely responsible, because it was he who not only funded that lab, but authorized the gain of function research experiments that Rand Paul talks about, where you turn like a harmless bat virus into a human killer. And I sat, I was the only guy, really, if you think about it, I remember the history, I was the only guy in the administration willing to take him on publicly. Almost got fired for it once, but I knew from the moment I looked into his pretty blue eyes there that man was pure evil. And the lie of omission to not tell us that thing probably came from the lab and that he was responsible. If he had told us that, guys, in January 2020, millions of people would be alive today, because we would have cracked down on China to release the original genome of that virus, and we could have designed a better vaccine, one much more quickly, and been that much more prepared that much more quickly. Fauci, the mission of In Trump book, one of them, is to put Fauci in jail. The second one is to hold the commies, communist China, accountable financially for all the harm they've done to us.
I love all this, by the way. You are killing it. Like, yeah. So, from your perspective, Trump has now said, I wish I had fired Fauci. The problem, Buck and I talked about this earlier this week, when Biden became president, he would have brought Fauci back, and it would have been like Fauci was a conquering hero for all the idiots out there who've been trying to follow all of his advice, which has been bad advice very often for the economy and for the country. Once Fauci got a public profile, and he's so political now, and he's always been political, but now he's protected by the Democrats, he should have to resign. He's not going to resign. How do we get Fauci out at this point?
Well, let me tell you the inside story that I tell in the In Trump Time book. I actually told the boss twice to fire Fauci, and the first time was after I came out of the sit room, the Situation Room. The boss had sent me there to argue on behalf of his travel ban on China, which would save millions of lives. And Fauci was the guy I was fighting. I came out and I went straight to the Oval. It's like, dude, it's just like, this dude is like, he's dangerous. He's toxic.
He was opposed to the initial China travel ban.
Yes, he was. And it's a great scene in the book. It's chapter two. Yeah, I go in there and there's like, I knew like Mulvaney was going to be against it. I had one of Pompeo's hacks I would fight. See if you can get this one. The Orville Redenbacher doppelganger. That would be Robert Redfield, the guy at the CDC. You know who I'm talking about. But anyway, Fauci's there and he's just like Flaubert's parrot going, travel bans don't work, travel bans don't work. I go, wait a minute, dude. Called him dude. It's like, you mean if 20,000 Chinese nationals a day are coming into Kennedy and LAX lit up with the Wuhan virus, you want them to keep coming in? What is wrong with you? So that's how I first met him. Didn't know he walked on water. Didn't know he was God. I took the measure of that guy, and it was like, he thinks he's smarter than he is. He's going to hurt this country. And what I didn't know then is that he had actually funded that friggin' lab in Wuhan. He had authorized those gain-of-function research experiments behind the back of the Trump administration, I might add, all documented in the In Trump Time book. And if he had just told us, I don't blame the boss for not taking my advice. The villain in that piece is you had all four of the big four health guys, like you had Hahn at the FDA, Redfield CDC, Azar at HHS, saying, he's God, keep him. But most important, I blame Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, because he didn't have the stones to take the blowback. To me, it was like a 1 or 2 day story. It's like, but his press team were like little lamb sheeps. Mulvaney was a scared little baby. It's like, oh, don't fire Fauci. He's God. Too much blowback. No. I was like Churchill on Hitler, like strangle that Fauci baby in the crib. And like, how do you fire him now? It's like, I'm coming at him hard. I mean, his approval rating's gone from over 70% down into the toilet with Biden in the 30s. And if people read the In Trump Time book, that guy's gone. He's in prison. And if you don't believe me when you read the book that Fauci should be in prison, here's my offer, guys. I'll give you double your money back.
Peter, I'm going to go get a copy of this book now. Clay and I are really, really appreciative you joined us here and lightening up. And so much of what you say here is just ringing so true. In Trump Time, a journal of America's plague here. Peter Navarro, former Assistant President Trump. Sir. Fantastic. Appreciate it. Good luck with the book.
You guys are fun. Take care.
We're fun. He's all. That was, I mean, wow.
He brought a flame. Man. He brought a flamethrower. I thought we were going to have a little marshmallow roast, and he brought in a flamethrower.
He came in there. It was like he suited up like Schwarzenegger in Commando, ready to go. I love it. All right. We also love our dogs. I'm the first one to admit it. You know that. We want to take care of our pets. One way to do that is to make sure they eat the right things. Most dog food, for instance, is manufactured to be able to sit on supermarket shelves for a long time. That's dog food without any live nutrients, and that's not healthy. The solution is Rough Greens, a healthy supplement you put into your dog's food with plenty of live nutrients. Our food has plenty of live nutrients, as you know, human being food, so it stands to reason that dogs need those live nutrients, too. This is the stuff your dog needs. Probiotics, enzymes, vitamins, omega oils, healthy microbacteria. How do you get it in there? You just add rough greens into your dog's current food. It's an additive. You put it in your dog's food. It's amazing. Rough greens, R-U-F-F, will make your dog's food healthier and make your dog feel better. What you get is a happier, healthier dog like our beloved Frenchie Tallulah in the Sexton household. That's what we all want, right? The folks at Rough Greens are so confident your dog is going to love Rough Greens, they've got a special deal for listeners to this program. Go to roughgreens.com/EIB. R-U-F-F, roughgreens.com/EIB. They're going to give you the first bag of Rough Greens free. All you pay is shipping. That's roughgreens.com/EIB, roughgreens.com/EIB.
Welcome in, hour number three, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. One of the most popular guests we have because everybody else has managed to cancel him or run from him. Alex Berenson, can read his Substack, latest news, details, all of his analysis. Also has a book coming out soon called Pandemonia, something like that. I'll ask him exactly what it's called, but you should go sign up for that as well. Many different angles to hit him with, but I want to start. We teased this as we finished off hour two. Rochelle Walensky, the CDC director, I don't know if you've heard this clip yet, Alex, but she just tweeted this out in the last hour. I want you to listen, and then I'll let you begin your hit with us reacting to CDC Director Rochelle Walensky. Here she is talking about the importance of masks.
The evidence is clear. Masks can help prevent the spread of COVID-19 by reducing your chance of infection by more than 80%. Whether it's an infection from the flu, from the coronavirus, or even just the common cold. In combination with other steps like getting your vaccination, hand washing, and keeping physical distance, wearing your mask is an important step you can take to keep us all healthy.
I mean, this is just a lie, but I imagine your blood is boiling when you hear this. This is not something that was said in April of last year. This is something that the CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, just put out on social media in the last hour. Your reaction to Alex Berenson?
I mean, my blood is not even boiling, Clay, because it's not a lie. It's a joke. Okay, it's a joke. 80%? Like, where on earth did she get that number? She just made it up. There's not a bit of evidence that masks reduce. You know, we're talking about normal, even N95s, by the way. But there's not a bit of evidence that the cloth or surgical masks reduce your rate of getting COVID at all. Basically, and the idea for a while was, well, maybe they'll keep you from, you know, giving it to other people. The evidence for that is quite weak too. But it's nonsense. Okay, it's an absolute lie. And here's the thing: we've all been alive the last 18 months, right? We've all seen, we've all worn masks. Everybody, even in the red states, basically wore masks. We all did our part. We wore our masks last fall. It made no difference. COVID doesn't care whether you're wearing a mask. And there's a good biological reason for that, which is that it's too small for the mask to have any impact on. This is not magic, okay? If we were all walking around in, you know, hazmat suits with our own purifiers and oxygen supplies, we wouldn't pass COVID to each other. But we're not. I mean, there still might be a tiny bit of contamination here and there, even in super secure labs it happens sometimes. But we probably wouldn't, but we're not. We're wearing basically bandanas on our faces, okay? And even the better surgical masks are not really much more than that. And does she think that anybody believes this? The conclusion that I've come to over the last year, and especially the last few months, about masks is that masks are purely a symbol for these people. They think it keeps people scared. It is a lot, and I saw this, you know, I was on the train yesterday in New York, you know, in New York City. When people are wearing masks, it signals danger in general. When people are not wearing masks, it signals normality. And for whatever reason, these people want us to stay frightened. And they will do almost anything for that.
Alex, I want to ask, I mean, I'm seeing this as, because Clay sent this to me, he knew that my head explodes. I've hated masks from the beginning. I never have accepted or believed the Fauci explanation that he lied to us for our own good because of supply. No, I'm sorry. That's one. It's unethical to do that. Even if you think that's what you're doing. I also think that that was the after the fact justification of it. But it seems to me that you got two things happening right now. You have, masks are great right before we're about to go into winter time when blue states, Clay just gave me the stats in the break here. Vermont, highest caseload ever right now.
Yep.
You got blue states that are starting to see. New York, higher caseload where I am right now than at exactly this time last year. So they're saying, oh, masks are so great because they know people aren't as mask, enthusiastic as they had been. And also the boosters are rolling out. It seems to me that if we hit a big surge, they're just going to say, we didn't mask up hard enough and you didn't get your boosters fast enough. And they're going to pretend they were right about everything else. What am I missing?
No, I think you're right. It's not, and by the way, I think that they are aware that that a lot of people are not listening to them anymore. This is an excuse, okay? Because the vaccines now, it has been 6 months for a lot of people who got them. You know, the peak time was March, April. Now we're November. That's 6 months plus. So booster efficacy is falling towards zero for infection and transmission. We're heading into the winter, and it looks like primary vaccines, first and second dose. It looks like a lot of people don't want boosters. The LA Times actually had a story today about how in California, there's 40 million people. There are very few. There's a couple hundred thousand boosters a day going out. People. Under 65 certainly feel, aside from, the few Karens and Neils out there who are terrified of this thing still unreasonably after 18 months, most people feel, I got my shot, I did my part for this, I'm not getting a booster. That's pretty clearly, out there. And even older people, I think some of them have questions now. Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to get another shot? And so they know people are not getting boosters. And if people are not getting boosters, that means there's no chance that we will avoid a surge in the blue states. Everywhere from California, all the places that had a surge last fall and into the winter are going to have a surge. And so, yes, they are trying to look for a reason not to be blamed for this. When the reason is everything they've promised has been wrong. It's either been a lie or wrong or both. And they can't run away from it anymore.
Alex Berenson with us. Alex, the data in Europe is scary for people out there who are going to say, oh, the vaccines are going to cure the pandemic. European countries, overwhelmingly, many of them very well vaccinated, and cases are surging as, guess what happens? It gets to be cold and flu season there. COVID cases are skyrocketing. Is there any reason to believe that Europe is not prologue for America in the winter now as well?
No, absolutely not. There's every reason to believe that is going to happen. And you're absolutely right, whether it's Germany, the Netherlands, Denmark, all these Northern European countries. And by the way, in Portugal, which has been held up by the vaxxers as, oh, they got it done. They brought this general in and they got 90% of their adults vaccinated. Cases have just started to rise in the last couple of days. Well, Portugal obviously is Southern Europe, so they're a little bit behind Northern Europe in terms of this. But yes, it's going to happen there in Ireland. Look, at this point, Clay and Buck, I don't even think it's a debate that the vaccines have failed. Okay, they have failed. They have failed. There is some evidence that they can protect people who are at high risk from really serious outcomes. A lot of those people are still dying, by the way, but, just like the monoclonal antibodies do, because essentially that's all they do is they cause this sort of short-term spike in antibodies for your body. But is there anybody out there who still believes that these protect people from being infected or getting transmission? To me, we should be talking about a bigger question. And what I'm really focusing on the stack right now, on Substack, which I do hope people at least go check out, and you can sign up for free or you can pay. I actually don't care, but go to Substack.com and put my name in. But what I'm talking about on the stack now is A, side effects, B, like immediate side effects from, a third dose, and B, what is happening long term to hospitals all over the world? Okay. Hospitals are filling up. They're filling up in Australia. They're filling up in the UK. They are filling up in parts of the US. They are not filling up with COVID patients. This is not about COVID patients overrunning hospitals. Something is wrong and we don't know what it is. It could be that medical care has been delayed in the last year and, people are now getting sick. It could be that, suddenly a lot of, 30-year-olds who were inside are making up for lost time and, driving too fast and drinking too much, and some of those people are dying. But it could also be that this mass biological experiment we've carried out over the last year with these mRNA vaccines and other vaccines is coming back to haunt us. And we don't know, and we'd better find out, and we'd certainly better find out before we start pushing a booster or pushing mandates or pushing vaccines on children. We need to figure out why the hospitals are filling up worldwide.
We're speaking to Alex Berenson, author of Pandemia. Also, please go subscribe. Full disclosure, I'm a subscriber. Go subscribe to his Substack, and you could see the research and the work that he's doing day in and day out. And Alex, it seems to me that if we're really, I mean, we're basically at the paradigm that many of us thought we were going to all along here, which is this is going to be something like the flu. I had an epidemiologist friend actually reach out to me, text me recently and say, with animal reservoirs, rapid mutation and rapidly failing vaccines, the chance of getting this to a situation where it's in any way close to measles, where we've kind of mostly eradicated it, or even something like smallpox, where we've effectively entirely eradicated it, is completely impossible. So we're at a point now where we're going to have a seasonal shot that only really works to prevent people who are already at high risk from possibly getting hospitalized or dying. That sounds a lot like our posture with regard to the flu, and has been my whole life, right? My parents used to get flu shots before the pandemic. But instead of moving in that direction, they're not trying to get five-year-olds to take the shot. I mean, Alex, in San Francisco, you're going to have to provide a birth certificate, I guess, so your four-year-old doesn't have to show the vax papers to go into a McDonald's.
Yes. It's insane. It's insane. Kids are at no risk from this, effectively no risk. You know, again, there's always going to be an exception. There was a story the other day in a newspaper in Syracuse about a guy, an 18-year-old who died, okay? And they, and in paragraph 10, they acknowledge the truth. He weighed 400 pounds. He was 18 years old, morbidly obese, okay? If you are under really 40, and you are dying from COVID, you are likely somewhere between, you know, you're morbidly obese, you have other, you know, serious health problems. This, the idea that we are forcing younger people to get this and that we would force children to get it is insane. And the risks, even if the risks are low, it doesn't make, it makes very little sense to vaccinate children against this.
Alex, we want to, can we bring you back in a second? Because Aaron Rodgers is trending right now.
Have you seen the Aaron Rodgers comments yet, Alex?
I know he's unvaccinated. He did this homeopathic thing, but I haven't seen his comments.
Well, we want to play for you the comments and have you react to them in real time. So can you hold over with us for a second?
Sure.
We got Alex Berenson with us, folks. We'll come back with him in a second, author of Pandemia. One sure way to cut monthly household expenses without sacrificing any of the quality of service? Switch your cell phone to Pure Talk Cellular from AT&T, T-Mobile, or Verizon. That alone will likely save you $50 or $60 a month. If the whole family's on your plan, you're likely to save, get this, over $800 a year. Pure Talk is on the exact same 5G network, using the exact same towers as one of those big carriers you already know, but for a heck of a lot less money for you. Switching is so easy. You can keep your phone number and your phone. Get a new SIM card. I've done this before. Did it with my Pure Talk phone. Install it in your existing phone. You can do it in less than half an hour. It's time for a new phone. Pure Talk has a Black Friday sale this entire month with a new iPhone 12 for just $479. You keep your same phone number, get a new phone at a great price, and save money, Clay, each month. Save great cash every month on your cell phone bill.
Yeah, it's an incredible offer from Pure Talk. You get unlimited talk, text, 6 gigs of data on Pure Talk's 5G network, and it's just $30 a month. My own 13-year-old, my eighth grader, has this exact phone plan. Bill in Tennessee signed up. He made the switch, and he said, great reception, great price, excellent service, 30-day risk-free guarantee for you, so you literally have nothing to lose. How do you sign up? From your cell phone right now, dial #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll get 50% off your first month, and you'll be able to save on a new phone. That's #250. Say Pure Talk. Some restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis Buck Sexton Show. We got our friend Alex Berenson, author of Pandemia, and go subscribe to his Substack if you want some COVID truth rooted in numbers, data, reality. He's with us now. Alex, thanks for staying through. We just wanted to play for you. This is some of what Aaron Rodgers has said that's made him the #1 trending topic on Twitter. Go for it.
Had there been a follow-up to my statement that I've been immunized, I would have responded with this. I would have said, look, I'm not, some sort of anti-vax flat earther. I am somebody who's a critical thinker. You guys know me. I march to the beat of my own drum. I believe strongly in bodily autonomy and the ability to make choices for your body, not to have to acquiesce to some woke culture or crazed, group of individuals who say you have to do something. Health is not a one-size-fits-all for everybody.
Alex, the people that want vax for COVID for five-year-olds are losing their minds over this.
I mean, look, on the one hand, good for Aaron Rodgers for not getting vaccinated. He's at zero risk from COVID, right? I mean, he's a very healthy professional athlete. On the other hand, you know, I think he should have told the truth 3 months ago. I mean, he tried to sort of dance between the rainbows or the raindrops, and he got caught. And now he, you know, he should own that, and he didn't. He's not really owning it. So he's making he's going to make the vaccine fanatics mad. And at the same time, he's not going to really be supported by people like me. You know, I think Kyrie Irving is much more honest, right? Kyrie doesn't want to be vaccinated, and he's willing to sacrifice an enormous amount of money because it's what he believes. You know, Aaron Rodgers is the MVP of the NFL. So did the NFL know he wasn't vaccinated? They certainly did. And did they allow him to pretend he was? They certainly did. So, you know, one set of rules for Aaron Rodgers, one set of rules for Kyrie Irving. But I agree with Aaron Rodgers. Why should he be vaccinated? If he wants to be, that's up to him. It's his choice. And we are seeing now, we saw another professional athlete at the highest levels, a striker for Barcelona, which is, as you know, is one of the, you know, top soccer clubs in Europe. Was taken off the field a couple of days ago, and he's since had an undisclosed cardiac procedure, and he's not going to be back for several months. And he was vaccinated. We know he was because he's out there telling kids to get vaccinated. So you know, if I were a professional athlete, and I wouldn't go near this thing. It appears that the sort of the heart and the myocarditis risks of this. Of the mRNA vaccines are especially, prominent in young men, especially in healthy young men. So why would you get vaccinated? So, you know, good for Aaron Rodgers for doing what he thinks is right. Boo to Aaron Rodgers for not telling the truth about it.
It's interesting. You mentioned Kyrie Irving, and obviously Kyrie Irving has been much criticized. That's not an NBA rule. It's worth mentioning. The reason why Kyrie Irving can't play is because of New York City vaccine mandates. The NBA itself did not mandate the vaccine for players, just like the NFL hasn't. But they have all these protocols in place. Okay, so Alex, I always like to ask you, I know trying to predict COVID has made fools of us all, but as we sit here in early November, where are we headed for the holiday season? We need you to be quick. We got like a minute here.
Sure. I think I've said this to you guys before. I think we're going up. Look, there was one, we haven't talked about this at all. There's one piece of very, very good news today. Pfizer announced that a drug that they have, a therapeutic, looks really good at helping people with COVID if they're diagnosed within 3 days of showing symptoms. And, you know, and as a result, the vaccine maker stocks, Moderna and BioNTech, are getting crushed today. What the stock market at least is saying is this is going to end, and it's going to end with therapeutics and not vaccine, which has historically been how we treat, you know, most respiratory diseases. So, eventually we're going to get there. But the idea that it's going to be a bad couple months, I think, because the vaccines are failing. No question about it.
When do we know, by the way, Alex, real quick, I mean, how many of the people in hospital right now nationwide are fully vaccinated? Do we have that data yet?
We have no data. And in fact, the CDC is hiding data again. They used to disclose how many people who were fully vaccinated had died. They stopped updating that yesterday. They are hiding data.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Until people get the boosters. Pandemia is the book, the Substack for Alex Berenson's, where you should go if you want daily updates. Alex, man, we always appreciate you. It's going to be a cold winter. We're going to be talking to you more.
Thanks, guys.
The end of the year starts now with the upcoming holiday season, and it's a mad dash to the new year. While most people call it the holiday season, Tommy John wants you to know it's also softness season. You're going to push hard, but try to go easy on yourself. Start with a new pair of Tommy John men's underwear. When you start your day wearing Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. Tommy John men's underwear has breathable, lightweight, moisture-wicking fabric with 4 times the stretch of competing brands. You'll feel the same level of comfort layering. There's luxuriously soft loungewear, shirts, pullovers, hoodies, right on top of each other. They're so comfortable and good looking. I'm wearing them every day. I got t-shirts, I got hoodies, I got the pajama pants, I got all kinds of stuff. Tommy John doesn't have customers, folks. They have fanatics. Clay and I are two of them. Plus, it's all backed by the best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order right now at TommyJohn.com/buck. That's TommyJohn.com/buck for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/buck.